Welcome to the Master Your Health podcast. My name is Amanda Rocchio, previously Amanda Meixner. I am best known for my meal prep and nutrition content. And today I'm here with my co-host, the research junkie between the two of us, and my husband, Chris Rocchio.
What's up, everyone?
Hey guys, how's it going today? Today we wanted to chat with you all about gut health. But before we get into today's episode, Chris was going to read a 5-star review from one of our listeners.
All right, so this is from K-Treb, and the title is, "These Two Are Rock Stars." And that was all caps on the rock stars, just to emphasize that. I absolutely love Amanda and Chris, and this podcast they have put together is no different. There is so much interesting, useful, and amazing information packed into these episodes. They both are so educated, and they make sure to do their research, along with only featuring reliable guests who have also done their research. This podcast is extremely helpful, especially for those of us that strive every day to lead a healthier and more fit lifestyle. Thanks so much for what you two do. Never stop. Hugs and kisses.
Aww, well, thank you. That's really sweet. Thank you so much for that review. And if you guys could take a moment to leave us a review, it means so much to Chris and I. I know I say that every episode, but it really does help keep the momentum going and help let us know we're making an impact in your life.
Absolutely.
So today we're talking all about gut health. And I actually think it's funny because I'm actually half Austrian. So my dad is from Austria. And when you think about Austrian food, it's not really that healthy, you know, like bratwurst, wiener schnitzel, strudel.
I can attest to that with our trip to Austria last year.
But when I think about Austrian food, I also think a lot about sauerkraut. You know, you'll put sauerkraut on a bratwurst, or I just see it around a lot. My dad always had sauerkraut in the kitchen. And learning that sauerkraut is actually fermented cabbage that has a lot of probiotics and actually a lot of benefits to adding sauerkraut to your salads, to your healthy meals. I mean, even to your bratwurst, if you're going to have some bratwurst. It's kind of cool to see, like, traditional foods, there's really something to them, and to pay attention to why our ancestors made certain foods and why they did certain things.
Yeah, absolutely. And my dad used to hate sauerkraut when I was a kid. And so anytime my mom would want to make it, he'd be like, "Oh, I hate sauerkraut." And then so, you know, as sons, we worship our fathers. And so I'm like, "Yeah, I hate sauerkraut too." And I didn't even know until I was an adult and I started shopping for my own food that I was like, "Oh, maybe I'll try this. Maybe my dad was missing something." And I liked it right off the bat. So I don't know, maybe it was just my gut was starving for it. You know, who
knows? It needs it now. Yeah. So now, I mean, I probably wouldn't put sauerkraut on a bratwurst every day, but I love adding sauerkraut kimchi to my salad. So we'll get into fermented foods a little bit later and how that really helps feed the good bacteria in our gut. But what I wanted to start with is an overview of what the gut is, because I do think some people assume that your gut is mostly your stomach. You might not think of the other aspects of your gut. So what is the gut? The gut, aka the gastrointestinal tract, is a long tube that starts at your mouth and ends at the back passage, aka your anus. So when we eat food, food passes through your esophagus into your stomach, where your stomach acid begins to break down the food. Food then passes into your small intestines, where your body absorbs much of the nutrients, vitamins, and minerals. After that, the waste that is left over from the process travels into your large intestine. Your large intestine will then extract water in order to hydrate the body and allow the waste material to be compacted into feces. The final step of this process is elimination. Bowels should be evacuated at least once per day, and urination should take place at least 6 to 8 times throughout the day. So everyone's different, but if you're not pooping pretty much every day, that's not a good thing. You should definitely look into that. Aside from, you know, maybe you're traveling, sometimes you might not be quite as regular. But if you're not regular on an ongoing basis, that is a sign that you have a problem.
Yeah, and it's also the consistency too. If you have, you know, so if you have some things wrong, if you sense anything is off, that means that you have to address some issues, you know, whether or not it's the frequency or the consistency, there's something off there. And so, just make sure that if you have any level of discomfort whatsoever, there's some misfire that you need to address.
So that's really just the beginning of it. The GI system does have a much more complex job than just digestion and evacuation. It's been linked to numerous aspects of health that were previously unrecognized, things like immunity, emotional stress, and even chronic illness. So Chris is going to get into some more of the other stuff that our digestive system does.
Yeah, one of the most important things is that we have to address before we get into all the mechanisms and things is just the importance of the microbiome of your GI tract. And your microbiome refers to the trillions of microorganisms living in your body. And that is actually trillions. There's approximately 100 trillion microbes. And that's about 10 times the amount of human cells, which is just crazy. When I heard that, I had to like recheck and then check again. And I still have to check to make sure it hasn't been updated. So, because it's just crazy. but within that is 1,000 distinct bacterial species. And then you can also have mostly bacteria, but it's fungi, you know, or yeast. So obviously, traditionally, we always think of bacteria being a bad thing. But in this case, we have, you know, these symbiotic bacteria in our system. And by symbiotic, we mean just a mutually beneficial relationship, and where we gain something, they gain something. And
yeah, no, an example of this would be how in our small intestine, we actually have bacteria that help us extract the nutrients from our food, mm-hmm. but they in return get food and a home to live in. So
yeah, just leech off my gummy bears, man.
And your watermelon.
Right. Ideally, you want a diverse array of microorganisms, and this is key to maintaining health. And researchers see much less diversity in bacteria of unhealthy individuals, as well as an increase in the strains of bacteria associated with disease. And usually when they use the word associate, it really means that there's a correlation, but they haven't really established causation. So in this case, they're sure that there's a bacterial imbalance, but they aren't sure whether or not it's the cause of the disease or the result of it. So that still has to be sorted out. But the main thing is that there's definitely a tie between those two things. And so, you know, researchers are looking into that to see if they can possibly use that as a way of treating in the future. And so we'll get into some of those possibilities and the promising studies. And also one of the most important aspects of it is its function in the immune system.
Yeah, it really is an important component of your gut and making sure your whole system is flourishing by supporting the good bacteria throughout your body and the lining of your gut. So some bacteria fight inflammation while others promote it. So that's probably what we would consider the bad bacteria. So we got
Your pathogenic.
The good bacteria. I know it's like the good bacteria and the bad bacteria. So the gut microbiome affects your body throughout your life by controlling the digestion of your food, immune system, central nervous system, and other bodily processes. Considering about 70% of the immune system is housed in the gut, focusing on gut health is crucial to optimizing your overall health. And it really makes sense when you think about it, because there are three ways substances can get into our system. So one would be injection, two would be inhalation, and three would be eating it, which is by far the easiest way microorganisms can enter our bodies. So our digestive tract has evolved to regulate adaptive processes in the immune system. An imbalance of healthy and unhealthy gut bacteria can lead to a host of health issues. This is called gut dysbiosis, and not only can it cause discomfort in the digestive system, it has recently been linked to metabolic and inflammatory gastrointestinal diseases.
Yeah, and things like age, diet, stress, diseases, pathogens, antibiotics, these are just some of the ways that our microbiome can become imbalanced. And obviously there are conditions of varying severity where the integrity of the intestinal lining is messed up due to chronic inflammation. So when you have an inflammatory environment in the intestines for too long, the integrity of the lining of the intestine can become, let's just say, damaged, right? And this can lead to what's called intestinal permeability. And this allows certain things like bacteria and other substances from inside the GI tract to kind of leak out and into the rest of the body. And this is associated with certain things like bacterial translocation and with extraintestinal autoimmune diseases. So this is extremely detrimental if let's just say you have a poor diet with a lot of processed foods, a lot of inflammatory foods, and that's just, persists for a long period of time. That creates this inflammatory environment, otherwise called chronic inflammation. And, there can get certain conditions like IBD, IBS, celiac disease, certain metabolic disease, colon carcinoma. You got to really address that. That's what I was talking about. If there's any discomfort in the digestive system when you eat in certain foods, you shouldn't ignore that. You shouldn't be like, oh, I need to just pop an antacid and then it'll go away. Like, you really need to listen to your body in those situations. And we just want to bring this stuff to your attention, but we'll cover more of these conditions in length in Gut Health Part 2, and that'll be coming up in the future. And we'll have a specialist on and break all this down for us so we don't leave any stone unturned. But also know that for now, that if you're overtaxing your system, and that could be things like refined carbs, processed foods, that can lead to the inflammation that we're talking about, that can lead to these long-term effects.
Now, the good news is what you eat can positively affect your gut, but mm-hmm. obviously the bad news on that is if what you eat too much of something bad.
Yeah, that's the reverse. Like yeah. I was talking about how that poor diet can cause the inflammation, but then you can switch it around and kind of reverse it by changing what you eat.
Right, and of course consuming some of your favorites in moderation is not a problem. It's really the ongoing chronic exposure or overeating too much of the sugary, highly processed foods.
Mm-hmm.
So now the gut goes beyond this and really influences our brain through the gut-brain connection, which I learned about recently. I still think it's a little crazy how much our gut is tied to our brain.
Right.
And this breakdown actually blew my mind a little bit. So really the brain and intestines are linked through the gut-brain axis, which transports information from the gut to the brain via the vagus nerve.
And also transports info back from the brain to the gut, which is great.
Basically, it's in constant communication, kind of mm-hmm. like Chris and I need to be to have the stars align for us. Yeah. So that's how the gut and brain work together. And the gut alone is aligned with over 500 million neurons that are connected to your brain. Cells in the intestine are lined with little things called villi. Each villus is lined with a bunch of different types of cell, but one of these cell types is called the enteroendocrine cell. Say that 5 times fast right now.
Enteroendocrine cell.
Thanks, Chris. These cells communicate with both hormones and nerves, including the vagus nerve. These cells that perform this communication are called neuropod cells. They sense and react to stimuli in the environment and send signals through the vagus nerve to the brainstem and can influence the brain within seconds. That's crazy.
Mm-hmm.
And that's why stress can cause GI problems because, you know, you're in your head, you're freaked out, you're stressing out. And then that's going to also affect your gut. Hence why we call the parasympathetic nervous system the rest and digest system. So that's when you're really going to best digest your food is when you're not overtly stressed out, you know, freaking out over things that it feels like there's a lion attacking you, but really you just need to pay your bills on time and there's a couple work deadlines. But our body can't really tell the difference unless we really learn to control some of our reactions and kind of get into a more meditative phase and get into that rest and digest system a little more often.
Yeah, and the vagus nerve plays a huge role in that. But one study in humans found that people with IBS or Crohn's disease had reduced vagal tone. And this means that the function of the vagus nerve was impaired. And another study in mice showed that probiotics reduced the amount of stress in their blood, but when their vagus nerve was cut, the probiotic had no effect on stress. So we are seeing that gut health, or lack thereof, has a much wider impact on our bodies than simply digestion. And we can see this connection between the gut and the brain with our neurotransmitters too. Our neurotransmitters are chemical messengers that transmit signals from one place to another. And this can be sent from a neuron to another neuron, a muscle cell, or a gland cell. So just how our endocrine system sends hormones to direct bodily processes, the nervous system uses transmitters as one of its ways to send information. And, you know, one of them, for instance, is serotonin, which gives us that feeling of like well-being and happiness and things like that. And it's also crucial because it's converted to melatonin later on in the day.
Mm-hmm.
But 90% of it is produced in the gut. And this is another one of the stats that I had to look and then relook because I couldn't believe that 90% of it is produced by microbes in the gut. And, you know, those, you can look up the specific ones. These things are like Candida, Streptococcus, Enterococcus. I'm not even sure if I'm pronouncing those, but I'm doing the best I can. And then you have things like GABA, which has a relaxing anti-anxiety effect. That's another neurotransmitter. And that is produced by two other strains of bacteria, Lactobacillus and Bifidobacterium. And then you also have dopamine, which is produced by another couple bacteria strains. And that's our motivation transmitter. And it's regarded as our main regulator of cognitive functions, such as decision-making, attention, memory, motivation, our reward center. So the evidence of these, you know, one specific study we found that'll be in the show notes strongly supports that the, quote, the microbiota gut-brain axis is key to the physiopathology of several neuropsychiatric disorders involving those where dopaminergic neurotransmission is compromised.
Can you say that in English, Chris, for our listeners right now? Because that was a mouthful.
I guess you're right. Okay, so... So basically there's a bunch of disorders that are associated with either like low dopamine levels or just a misfire in dopamine transmission. So what they're basically talking about is that the microbiome plays a role in these things, and that's not just isolated in the nervous system like previously.
Right. Yeah. So I guess that would lead you to believe that supporting healthy bacteria can also help you, you know, support a healthy brain.
That's exactly what it means, Amanda.
I'm a genius. So gut microbes also make other chemicals that affect the brain.
Yeah. And it's not just neurotransmitters. Your gut microbes make other chemicals that affect the brain as well. And one of those is short-chain fatty acids. And those are things like butyrate, propionate, and acetate. And they do this by digesting fiber and resistant starch. And this is great because short-chain fatty acids can reduce appetite and thus food intake by reducing the reward system in the brain from high-energy foods. You know, like, you need to get that high, that boost whenever you get, you know, you eat that gummy bear, or, you know.
You mean the gummy bears you eat?
Yeah, well, whatever. Whatever your sugary go-to is, you know, you get that reward center in your brain. So these short-chain fatty acids can actually inhibit that, and which will reduce those cravings. And butyrate, another one of these short-chain fatty acids, and the bacteria that produce it are key components in forming the blood-brain barrier, which is really crucial because it basically protects your brain from things that aren't supposed to get in there, essentially.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. So there have been some people who have talked about, you know, changes in body type and talking about how changing your gut microbiome can maybe change your body type. Because there was a couple different anecdotal situations, right, where there was, like, one woman, for instance, like, had a fecal transplant in her colon because she had this infection in her digestive system. And one of the treatments for that is this fecal transplant from somebody with a healthy gut microbiome. So I guess there were a few cases like this where, because she had gotten the transplant, it cured the infection, but she had gained like 34 pounds of fat within a year, and she, despite having, like, being on this strict diet.
Wow.
And she was also, at one point, because she was gaining weight, she got, like, on a high protein liquid diet, and she just couldn't keep the fat off. She gained 34 pounds of fat, and they thought it was because her daughter was obese, and they thought that there was something metabolically that she also got transplanted into her digestive tract. And so there have been a couple studies. They actually, in 2019, they just finished a double blind study, like the most, at this point, the best study they've done. And it didn't show any change in BMI or metabolic disorder. There's a specific protein that they studied, and they tried to track to see if there was any change, but there wasn't. So now they did, you know, they have proven that they successfully altered the microbiome. I mean, that is for sure. But
okay.
At this point, all the kind of anecdotal evidence that's out there saying that these transplants can also affect your body type, that you can become obese from transplanting that from another person. At this point, the studies don't show that. So that's both good and bad, you know, because it means that you don't have to be strict on the person that's your donor. But at the same time, it means that you can't just get a skinny person who's ripped to shreds and then go take their microbiome, you know. But there have been certain studies in, let's say, mice that show that there can be changes in personality. You know, obviously, you can't do this on humans, but it's very interesting. So one is that there were microbe-free mice were compared to those with a healthy gut microbiome. And the mice without microbes took more life-threatening risks. And they also had, so they were reckless, essentially. And they also had memory-related defects, like poor memory. Like, for instance, they would put something in the box and the mice would come and check it out. And the ones with the good memory would be uninterested the next time it was reintroduced because they had already kind of checked it out.
Okay.
But the other ones with the poor memory without microbes kind of forgot. They had short-term memory. And so they were checking it out like they had never seen it again, which I thought was interesting. And they also had lower levels of brain-derived neurotrophic factor. And that's a powerful protein important for learning and memory. And it stimulates the production of new brain cells and also stimulates existing ones. So extremely crucial for brain function. And it was inhibited with ones without microbes,
okay.
which is really interesting. Especially for, say, if you've just gone through a few rounds of antibiotics, if you just had a huge sickness and you had to wipe it out, you know, it's implications for that. If you completely destroy your microbiome, like Chris Kresser did, remember I was talking on that Joe Rogan podcast when he had that parasite? But back to the BDNF. So low levels of BDNF are also linked to depression and anxiety. So I thought that was interesting to solidify the gut-brain connection, or at least have another piece of evidence for that. And another study, which I thought was interesting, was showed that they divided these groups of these mice into groups of, let's just say, extroverted and introverted, you know, ones with high anxiety and others that were very social. And they put them on these platforms of different heights. And so the ones with the anxious personality type would take like an average of 4.5 minutes to like check it out. And they're scared and they're like basically just sitting on the platform frozen and then finally jumped off after 4.5 minutes on average. And then the extroverted ones just jump within seconds. They were just like, boop, I want to go, I'm out. And they were reckless, they were fearless, and they did it. Which was crazy is that they swapped their microbiome. So put a little bit of the fecal transplant into one and then just swapped them into the other. And what was crazy is that their degree of anxiousness changed. So the extroverts who got a little bit from the anxious group got a little bit more anxious. So they added a minute to their average time to jump off the platform. And the introverts, or the anxious ones, decreased the time that they jumped by an average of 1 minute. I think it's a minute or a minute and a half. I forgot. But
crazy.
But in, you know, some people be like, well, what if the anxious ones, they had already jumped, so they had gotten over the fear.
Oh, yeah.
But that doesn't describe how the other ones who had already jumped the first time successfully gained more fear.
Right.
So it's not conclusive, but I just think it's an interesting study.
No, it's really interesting.
Yeah.
So basically, if you're a risk taker, there might be something wrong with your gut microbiome. No, I'm just kidding. I wouldn't take it that far, but
No, I don't know. I mean, I'm just, these are all small things that show evidence and, you know, that basically give them more reason to look into this further and to test different methods for how this connection is present.
No, absolutely. And how the gut affects our brain and our mood and our choices in life. So it's not like a one-to-one if you take a long time to jump off the high jump at the pool. No, that's not what we're talking about.
Right.
But yeah, no, I think it's really interesting and really cool to hear all the new research coming out.
Yeah. I mean, some of these aren't, you know, very new, but relatively new, because I mean, they've only just started talking about this and really researching this in the last decade or so.
Really cool stuff. So this has led researchers to look into whether probiotics can be used as a treatment for certain conditions or psychiatric problems. There are a few studies that show improvements after taking probiotic supplements, which is good news, really. One study concluded that probiotic treatment resulted in the normalization of the immune response and reversal of behavioral deficits. So not only did it promote proper immune function, but it also had an antidepressant effect on par with a prescription antidepressant called citalopram.
Yeah, that's really interesting. And you have right here, you have one study that's showing the mechanisms in both the systems that we were talking about, and that being the immune system and you know, your nervous system, psychiatric problems, behavioral problems, things like that. So I think that that's really interesting. But one thing I did want to say as a caveat to this is that there's also a couple of studies out there showing that probiotic supplements, it's not like just going out and getting one probiotic supplement and then you're good. Because let's just say you go out and you get one strain and you're taking that like crazy and you realize like, oh, I should be taking X amount of billion, you know, cells of microorganisms per day or whatever. Well, if you're taking, let's just say, not a very diverse probiotic, that can create an overabundance of the one probiotic that you're taking. So be aware that if you are going to get these supplements, make sure that you're getting the most diverse array. And even if you have to get a couple different supplements to make sure that you're not just overpopulating, you know, let's just say a handful or even just one or two different strains. It's really interesting, though.
Yeah, that's a super helpful tip when picking out a probiotic. And I just think it's great to see that the promise of a more natural supplement to help with depression, because, you know, that cannot be a good feeling. And not everyone wants to have to turn to a prescription drug. So this is really promising.
Yeah, I mean, I'm really excited to see it, because obviously if you don't want to be addicted to prescription drugs, you know, SSRIs and things like that, you know, obviously they can have a great effect and they help millions of people every year and every day, but you don't want to be tied to that and taking that your entire life. You know, it'd be good to see if this would be a good way to like transition off of it or something like that. Say the antidepressants get you on the right track, get you out of the funk, you know, things like that, and then slowly address these issues in the meantime and then wean off and see if they can be supplemented, you know, so to speak.
Absolutely. So I totally agree with you. And honestly, speaking on prescription drugs, we wanted to get into a little bit on antibiotics and how that can have a negative effect on your gut microbiome. And so the truth is, antibiotics can be a lifesaver when they're absolutely necessary. But the problem here is that a lot of doctors are prescribing antibiotics a little bit too much. So like, you know, you come in, you have a sore throat, you have something more of cold systems, and you won't necessarily need to take a antibiotic for it. We're kind of giving out the antibiotic a little willy-nilly. And we really want you to take it seriously when it comes to taking antibiotics, because taking an antibiotic can really kill some of the good bacteria in your gut, and it shouldn't be taken lightly.
Yeah, I mean, obviously it can be a lifesaver when absolutely necessary, but you know, like you said, it's really overprescribed, and a lot of times they're prescribing a wide spectrum antibiotic. They're not giving you one antibiotic to go after one specific pathogenic bacteria. It's just going in and it's just carpet bombing everything. You know, I remember you were talking about how it's kind of like poisoning your cat because you're trying to kill the cockroaches in your house. You know,
I know we're laughing at that, but that would also be very sad, actually. No,
absolutely. But I mean, it's a good analogy, and I'm gonna tend to use it.
Absolutely. No. And that, so really take your antibiotic use seriously, and don't use it in, you know, situations where you think you could hold off a little bit longer.
Mm-hmm.
And in the United States alone, tens of millions of people are prescribed antibiotics for minor afflictions. So 60 to 80% of children taken to the doctor complaining of a bad sore throat or ear pain will walk out with an antibiotic. It's estimated that people will take a total of 30 courses of antibiotics by the age of 40, but the highest prescription rate was for children under the age of 2. Wow, that's really crazy.
Yeah, the number I saw was 1,365 courses of antibiotics per 1,000 babies.
I know, before I knew about all this, I would actually take antibiotics a little too often. I mean, I'm lucky because I don't think it affected me long term. I mean, maybe because of how healthy I eat, and mm-hmm. I do eat fermented foods and all that, but I would go to one of those wild concerts, those like 3-day concerts,
mm-hmm.
and I'd come back really sick. Oh, surprise, no yeah. sleep and thousands of people. And I remember going to my doctor, and like, I had work that week. So I was like, I just want to feel better for work. And I got the antibiotic and I took it. And now looking back on that, I'm like, I definitely didn't need to do that. And mm-hmm. maybe I could have taken more precautions to not get sick after that crazy weekend of concert.
Yeah, no, totally. But I mean, it's crazy because, I mean, you think about these connections really do hold water over time. And we do know that there's a causal relationship. It's not just correlation, right? Then that means that all of these antibiotics for babies being so young can really affect their, you know, certain things like behavior and brain development. And so, you know, it's really concerning that maybe they just are doing that a little bit too much, or maybe they're convincing parents who are just a little bit too nervous, because when kids are under 2, they're extremely susceptible to those types of diseases, things that we're resilient on later on in life. So especially new parents, right? Like you ever seen a parent on their first baby? Like I saw it like with my sister on her first kid. She's just like so crazy, and like the helicopter parent or whatever. And by the third, they're just so chill and relaxed.
Well, and I think it's important to talk to your doctor about this, and hopefully, you know, finding a doctor that is informed about the overuse of antibiotics, you know, see what their viewpoints are, or if they're willing to listen to your viewpoints about, hey, I really don't want to take antibiotics unless you think it's absolutely necessary for me or my children,
mm-hmm.
because it is important to have that kind of doctor, because you don't want to risk your child's life. So
yeah,
really finding a good doctor that can tell you when it's absolutely necessary would be ideal.
Yeah. And I didn't really look this up because I'm not sure how healthy it is to give, you know, kids probiotic supplements, but I imagine, you know, like with adults, I know personally when I was a kid, I didn't take probiotics after I did an antibiotic, right? I didn't replenish the gut with all the healthy bacteria. Just slowly builds up over time. But yeah, you can look into whether for yourself or for your kid, if you can directly after the course, you give some fermented foods if they're old enough, but if they're young enough, maybe a baby probiotic, something that's wide range that can maybe help jumpstart the building of that colony again.
Absolutely. And I mean, again, that would be a good question to ask your doctor if your kid did just take prescription antibiotics. I'm sure they would also have some opinion on probiotics, and you can mm-hmm. let them know if it's safe for your children or which one should you get for a child.
Yeah, sorry, I should have looked into that. That's not always on our radar yet. I mean, we want to have kids, and I'm definitely ready, but I have yet to train my mind to also look into that when I'm looking into nutrition and health research and things like that.
That'll be next up on our list. So after all this information that we shared with you, we really wanted to give you some action items of foods you can incorporate to really help promote a healthy gut, a thriving bacteria in your gut. So the foods we're going to talk about to start with are prebiotic and probiotic foods, and they go hand in hand when it comes to caring for your gut. So prebiotics are the type of fiber that feed the good bacteria in your gut. This helps the bacteria produce nutrients for your colon and leads to a healthier digestive system. Now, probiotics, on the other hand, are the live bacteria found in the fermented foods, but you can also get them in supplements like we talked about. We love to get our primary form of probiotics, honestly, from food when we can. But again, you can look into taking a supplement if you think you need more support or you just took a course of antibiotics. So just keep that in mind and really use these foods to help you feel better.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, you can definitely give yourself a leg up by incorporating these foods. I mean, you don't have to change that much. Just add a little bit. Like even when, like I would just have my normal, let's just say my steak, potatoes, broccoli combination, and then just throw a little bit of kimchi or sauerkraut on there and just add it to every meal. I mean, I'm not a foodie, so I don't need things to like go together. I have some of the most craziest, stupidest combinations of things strictly for utility and not for like have one thing complementing another on the plate. But they're very easy to implement, especially with salads. Like, things like kimchi and sauerkraut. Sometimes I just use that as salad dressing and don't even use salad dressing on top of my stuff. Just pour a little of the juice in there or something like that. That might be a little bit too much. Might want to throw for you guys at least. Like I said, I'm a little bit crazy and utilitarian with food sometimes.
I mean, I really do like adding sauerkraut and kimchi to my salads. I think they taste delicious. And for those of you who don't know, kimchi is just a fermented form of vegetables. I think it originated in Korea, I'm pretty sure.
Mm-hmm.
And then sauerkraut, like I said earlier, is, you know, Austrian.
More European. Yeah,
more European. So those are two of my favorites. And actually something I'm sipping on right now is kombucha, which is a healthy fermented tea with usually fruit added, maybe some sugar. So the sugar is needed in the kombucha to help ferment the bacteria, but you do want to look out for the amount. Or, you know, if it has a little bit more sugar, just know like, hey, this is adding to my total sugar load that day. Maybe I'll eat a little less fruit. So something to consider, but Chris and I are fully addicted to kombucha.
I'm a little addicted, yeah, absolutely.
But you know what? It's so much better for you than soda. So if you're using it to replace soda, please do that. Or if you're using it to replace, you know, maybe something sweet that you need in the afternoon, I think it's a great idea and it adds to the good bacteria in your gut.
Mm-hmm.
Another fermented food I really like are pickles, which are fermented cucumbers. And the important part here is to pick out the good kind of pickles, right, Chris? I think there's a certain kind you have to look for.
Yeah, you don't want to get the Vlasic ones, you know, your standard pickles that are sitting on the jar. And, you know, if you look in the ingredients, those are the ones with the yellow number 5 food dye and distilled vinegar, and that'll kill any probiotic bacteria. So you'd have to probably go to the refrigerated section and, you know, let's say like a Whole Foods or health food store, and they would most likely say it on the front that it is fermented. So
nice. Another thing that Chris always has stocked in our fridge is kefir. He drinks so much kefir. And if you guys don't know what kefir is, it is a fermented type of dairy. So it's a lot better for you than just drinking, you know, whole milk, because you get all the good probiotics. And if you do have an issue with digesting lactose, kefir is a great option for you.
Yeah, there's between 10 and 34 strains of bacteria, and it tastes a lot like Greek yogurt. It's just a little bit more liquid that you can drink, but I mean, it's pretty similar in terms of taste, but has a much more diverse array of bacteria, which is the reason why I switched over from Greek yogurt to that.
Oh, really cool. I mean, and also if you're not used to the taste of kefir, because I'm sure plain kefir has a pretty strong taste. I mean, just like a lot of people can't really handle Greek yogurt on its own, you could blend some kefir in a blender with some fruit and some vegetables and make yourself a really good tasting smoothie.
Mm-hmm. I like to go just straight plain though.
Chris just goes. Chris is a champion though. They also do have coconut kefir, so that's obviously made from coconut. So if you are plant-based, that's another option for you. Or if you really just don't tolerate any form of, you know, any form of dairy, that would be another option for you.
But I like that too. Coconut kefir is good. So it's not
really. I've never tried it actually.
It's really good.
So another form of fermented food that Chris and I like to eat is miso soup. We usually get it when we get sushi. You know, we always like to get miso soup, and it's a traditional Japanese soup, usually has tofu, really good, light. I always feel good after eating some miso soup.
Absolutely. And we can't forget about prebiotics too, because we got to feed the bacteria as well.
Absolutely. I mean, I love some of the prebiotic foods on this list. So an excuse to eat more apples, you know the saying, an apple a day keeps the doctor away. Well, that's because it's a prebiotic food.
Mm-hmm. I'm sure that's why. That's why they came up for it.
Another one that Chris and I like to eat a lot is asparagus. I think, Chris, asparagus is one of your favorite vegetables.
Yeah, the raw or the better as far as prebiotic. Oh, okay. Concerned. Yeah.
Well,
all of these things, the more raw, the better they are for prebiotic benefits.
But you still get some benefit if you do eat it cooked. But again, if you cook it for less time, that would also help it retain some of its prebiotic benefits.
Mm-hmm.
But I'm not eating raw asparagus. I'm good.
But I'm just talking about, like, instead of really saturating it with the steam and or sauteing it too much or whatever, just doing a light steam, give it a little flimsiness. It's good.
Yeah, and then add some garlic to add some flavor, which is also a prebiotic food.
There we go. Mm-hmm.
And then the other ones on the list also include onions.
Raw.
And then we like to do ripe bananas, so more of the greener bananas.
Yeah, the greener the better in this case.
So you can, if you don't want to eat it fully green, maybe find one that's transitioning green to yellow so you kind of get all the benefits. It won't taste quite as sweet, but, it'll be good for your gut.
Mm-hmm.
Another food that I like to eat all the time is oatmeal. I make overnight oats, steel cut overnight oats. Do you like my overnight oats, Chris?
I eat them.
You eat
them? I steal them from you.
You steal my overnight oats, my steel cut. And then a couple more vegetables that you could add to salads or your, other meals would be Jerusalem artichokes, leeks, jicama root, which I actually do like jicama root. It doesn't really have much flavor, but it's crunchy. So I do like that addition.
Mm-hmm.
And then actually seaweed, which I was surprised to find out that it was a prebiotic food. I know it had a ton of other benefits in general, but it's awesome to know that it's also a prebiotic food.
Yeah.
So we just want to end the podcast on some final takeaways and action items that you can do to really support your overall gut health, starting with things that you should maybe avoid. And like we said earlier, you should really avoid antibiotics because they kill a lot of the good bacteria in your gut. So remember, keep that in mind. Save that for only absolutely must need situations to take antibiotics.
Mm-hmm. Another thing is avoiding NSAIDs, and those are things like ibuprofen and Advil and things like that. So over-the-counter pills like ibuprofen can damage the what's known as the tight junction of cells that line your digestive tract. That's what we were talking about, the lining and how that the integrity of the lining gets damaged and cause that intestinal permeability and, allowing toxins, bacteria, other compounds to leak from your gut, damage other parts of the body, cause inflammation issues, autoimmune issues, all that kind of stuff. So instead, you want to try to gravitate towards more natural anti-inflammatories like turmeric, which has curcumin in it. And you can even take a curcumin supplement, which is a concentrated form of the anti-inflammatory. Another one is Boswellia. And you also have Advil, and you wanted to talk about Advil, right?
Well, it's just something like you get a headache, you get a migraine, and you really want to go and take an Advil. And I would just say try not to do that too often. I know it can be a lifesaver when, you're trying to get some work done. But also, usually a headache is a sign that maybe you're dehydrated, maybe there's other issues going on. So try to address those issues and try not to be popping Advil on the regular. And if you do need to do that, then you might need to look into what the core of that issue is and how you can support that on an ongoing basis and not involve Advil as much.
Nice. Another one we talked about before is eliminating, too many processed foods and refined carbs, things like that. So like we said, we want to reduce the inflammation as much as possible. So that's another good tactic. And also identify food intolerances. You can take an intolerance panel to see if you're sensitive, intolerant, or just outright allergic to certain things.
Mm-hmm.
And there are, certain, I think Cyrex Labs does that as one of the main ones. And if you don't have, let's just say you can't go out and do that right now, but if you're suspecting that there's a problem, like we were talking about before, doing a food journal, noticing when you're having those problems, that digestive discomfort, any problems whatsoever in the digestive system, write down what you ate, and then over the course of the week, you can look at, okay, I was having problems on Tuesday, Thursday, Saturday. What did I eat there? And if there's a common denominator, then you should eliminate that and see if the problem persists or subsides. So that's one of my main benefits, and that's the easiest way to do it without spending all the money on the panels and everything.
Love that, definitely.
We already talked about eating probiotic foods and supplements. We also want to exercise hard, but we want to focus on recovery. And that's a huge one Because intense workouts can increase cortisol, and that increases histamine, which increases gastric acid. And that leads to bloating and the release of other compounds that can cause that intestinal permeability. So that's another one. You know, just overall stress reduction in general is crucial. But people forget that intense training actually does increase cortisol. And so even though you're working out hard, but you're doing everything else right, that crazy 2-hour intense workout that you're doing every day but with no rest is going to catch up with you. And that's going to create some stress and possibly even chronic stress that can damage the gut.
Definitely. And that's when I would think someone would benefit more from adding in a little more yoga, a little more meditation. So, you know, planning your workouts properly, it's great to have some high intensity workouts in your week, but also plan rest days or some hot yoga. I mean, that might be a little too intense. Some regular yoga. I love hot yoga, so I'm a little biased. But, you know, some more low impact workouts in addition to some high intensity one, especially if you have a high stress job. Just take that into consideration when you're planning your week.
Mm-hmm. Another thing we already talked about, but we want to reiterate, is just getting the high quality fruits, vegetables, and getting a lot of them. Not only do you get the soluble fiber, but you want to get that resistant starch. And a good way to build that resistant starch, we talk about this a lot in our Instagram post, but is to cook and then cool carbs. Mm-hmm. So you don't eat them right away. So let's say you batch cook your sweet potatoes and then put them in the fridge and then come back and eat them later. That builds that resistant starch that we were talking about before. And we might as well talk about this now. I had a little section broken down, but we might as well just get into it. Is that this is really important because it basically passes through your stomach and upper intestine almost entirely undigested. Okay. And then so its integrity is intact. It gets into the intestines and feeds the healthy bacteria in your intestine, increases the production of short chain fatty acids like butyrate. We talked about all that. But that's extremely important, not just, you know, we're not just talking about veggies, but, you know, those starchy carbs cooked and cooled can create that resistant starch. It's really important. Resistant starch is, you know, it can come from things like beans, rice, lentils, oats, bananas, chickpeas, potatoes.
So definitely eat your resistant starch. I mean, I remember reading this and kind of getting excited because I had written off peas because I thought peas weren't really that beneficial. And I heard, oh, they don't provide that many nutrients. Like peas aren't the best vegetable. And then I was like, oh, it's a resistant starch.
Oh, it's one of my favorite vegetable protein sources. So
yeah, I'm into it. So
not only that, but also the protein. So it's that 1-2 punch.
So eat your peas, kids. Yeah. So another thing to add to your diet would be omega-3s, whether that's in the form of actually eating, you know, fatty fish like wild-caught salmon, or you can add in an omega-3 supplement, because omega-3s really help to reduce inflammation in your body. So right now in the U.S., we're currently having an issue with the omega-6 to omega-3 ratio. So the omega-6 ratio is much higher than the omega-3 ratio. I don't know. What's the standard that you've seen passed around lately?
About 16 to 1 to 20 to 1.
Wow.
So you have anywhere between those where you want to be, like you said,
1 to 1.
1 to 1 or 4 to 1.
Yeah. Absolutely. So adding in omega-3s in the form of supplement or eating more fish, you know, I like to eat seafood on the weekend because, you know, I meal prep my food. Salmon does not meal prep well. Mm-hmm. Let me tell you that. So on the weekends, I do like to use it as an excuse to try to get some wild caught salmon or other fatty fish into my diet.
Mm-hmm. Another thing that's important, so fundamental, but often overlooked, is chew your food. You know, a lot of people eat in front of the TV, and actually there are studies that show that when you're eating distracted, say in front of your computer working or in front of a TV, you tend to take less bites because you're not really focusing on it. And so as soon as the food is able to be swallowed, you just immediately swallow it, even though you can probably chew it up. And because you got to also understand, not only are you pre-breaking it down for the stomach, but you're also releasing enzymes in your saliva. And if you don't saturate that food with those enzymes, you're not getting the full breakdown, which means you're not getting the full absorption that you could possibly do if you were optimizing. So another good thing is chewing your food. But just to expand on that, because we're talking about enzymes, is you can take digestive enzymes if you're having some problems, you know. And especially like, you know, some people lack certain enzymes like lactose or whatever lactase to deal with lactose. You can actually take lactase and amongst array of other digestive enzymes that, you know, I always take them when I'm having, you know, let's say a cheat meal or something.
A treat meal.
Yeah, treat meal, whatever. I call them cheats because I really do cheat. But
I call it a treat meal because, you know.
Yeah, because you got to be all positive.
That's just me. That's just how I like to be. Yeah. But yes, it's a good time to take digestive enzyme if you're going to eat a little more. You know, give yourself a leg up in life.
Yeah, I do that. I also take betaine HCl, which is essentially stomach acid. And it's actually helped with bigger meals and helps digest those, you know, if it's my pizza night or something like that.
So am I the prettiest when I'm chewing my food, Chris?
You should see Amanda chew her food. It's the funny. And then the best is when she doesn't know I'm looking. So I'll be on the couch and, you know, and she's over in the dining room area and she's on her computer or on her phone and she's in her own little world, not knowing that she's being watched. And just shoveling food in her mouth. Won't even finish chewing and just shovel more food. She loves food more than anybody I know. I swear to God. And so
I don't know. You're kind of up there with me though, Chris.
I understand, but there's just certain times where you're in your own world eating. You know?
I do love the food I make. Hey, I like the food I make. I make it taste good.
You do, absolutely.
And it makes me feel good.
For sure.
So another thing to pay attention to is getting good sleep. Crazy fact, but bacteria have circadian rhythms too. Mm-hmm. I mean, that boggles my mind to think about. But also, you know, just I know that I feel best after like a full night's sleep. Like I feel well digested. I always find that I have stomach issues usually after I get less sleep. So that adds to my grumpiness when I'm not getting good sleep. So, you know, make that a priority. If you miss our sleep podcast, make sure to go back and listen to that.
Yeah, and there's actually been a couple studies that have showed that sleep deprivation can lead to changes in the gut microbiome, but also some other studies that show that it doesn't. And so just keep in mind that there's the possibility out there that it's still very contentious, but doesn't mean that that the conclusion has been made. So just keep that in mind. But nonetheless, we're talking about, you know, sleep definitely has an effect on stress, has an effect on your hormones, on your neurotransmitters, all these things. And then so knowing that there's that connection between the gut and all these things, you still have to concentrate on it. So nonetheless, through all these things, all these processes that we're talking about, sleep is fundamental no matter what. We should have said that first as far as I'm concerned.
Absolutely.
Another good thing is polyphenol-rich foods. And these are things like cacao, green tea, olive oil. And polyphenols are plant chemicals that are digested by gut bacteria. So they increase healthy gut bacteria and they may improve cognition. So that's important. Another good thing is tryptophan-rich foods. And tryptophan is an amino acid that's converted into serotonin. Very important. And you get that from turkey, eggs, and cheese. And we already talked about stress reduction tactics. And I think that's it. I mean, do you have any other things to add?
So I know we've talked about processed foods a lot throughout this podcast. You know, in general, you'll probably see us talking about it on our page. Mm-hmm. But I wanted to go in a little more detail what to look out for in these processed foods. Now, general rule of thumb is the less ingredients, the better. A lot of people like to recommend 5 ingredients or less. But again, you know, that depends on the product. And it's better if you can get good at reading the individual ingredients because that will really tell you whether or not the product is good. So I wanted to give you a few takeaways of things to look out for in specific products. And if you see these in the products, you know, avoid them overall or just minimize your consumption overall of any products that contain these ingredients. And that would be artificial flavors, artificial colors like blue dye, red dye, yellow dye, all that stuff you want to try to avoid. Also some unnatural sweeteners. So high fructose corn syrup is hidden in a ton of different, you know, candies, desserts, even in ketchup. So really look out for high fructose corn syrup and look for more natural sweeteners than that, or aspartame, sucralose, all those you don't want to be consuming on an ongoing basis. And then again, you want to look out for different preservatives. So that will have the name of like BHT. So look out for preservatives that you just don't understand. And also lastly, look out for partially hydrogenated fat or even like vegetable oils. Those are also highly inflammatory. They have a high omega-3 ratio. So those are just some ingredients to look out for when you're shopping the processed food aisles. And stick to foods with less ingredients and hopefully ones that you mostly understand. And if you don't understand the ingredients, then go ahead and Google them and see if they fall in a more inflammatory category.
Yeah, and when she was talking about the omega-3 ratio, what she says, she meant the omega-3 to omega-6. And so, and usually when you have things like soybean oil, that's highly inflammatory because of the high omega-6 content.
Yes.
So just to clarify with that.
Yes. Spot on.
So we've already gone over the high amounts of refined carbohydrates, but another thing that we often overlook is excessive alcohol. And that's really important because everybody knows about like liver damage and alcoholism and all the things that can come from that, but we often don't think about just inflammation in the gut. So that's something to think about as well.
Yeah, I mean, I'm not a big drinker, but, you know, minimizing your alcohol consumption overall. I mean, Crystal enjoys the occasional glass of wine, but if you're going for that on an ongoing basis, think about maybe how that could be hurting your gut and what else you could do instead of always going for a glass of alcohol to calm you down. You know, what else could you add to your life? Like maybe an Epsom salt bath and some tea.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. And another thing to talk about is processed meats. And these are things like cured meats, sausages, bacon, ham, smoked meat, beef jerky. If it doesn't say uncured on it, then most likely it has these AGEs, and these are advanced glycation end products. And those are a result of cooking these meats at really high temperatures. And these things can definitely cause inflammation, so you want to look out for those as well.
So when you're talking about processed meats, you know, I'm assuming you're referring to deli meats, pepperoni, mm-hmm. I guess bacon that isn't nitrate-free, all that kind of stuff.
Yeah, that's
okay.
Exactly it.
That's good to know. So avoid that aisle as much as possible.
But yeah, you always buy the uncured bacon, so.
Yes, and they do have uncured, I think, turkey mm-hmm. breasts and stuff, because I know that can be a lifesaver when you have kids and all that. So.
Yeah, they're doing more and more stuff. So, I mean, just be on the lookout for things that uncured. It's a huge marketing tool, so it'll be printed right on the front of the package if they have it. So, I mean, while we're doing it, we might as well talk about some anti-inflammatory foods. And so right off the top, I mean, you got berries and fatty fish. I mean, you already talked about omega-3s because of the omega-3 to omega-6 ratio. Broccoli, avocados, green tea, peppers. I really, you know, not just bell peppers, but we're talking about chili peppers, you know, things that give it a little bit of spice. They give you some antioxidants in the form of quercetin, so, and a whole bunch of others. I mean, it's great for reducing oxidative damage and inflammation. You also have mushrooms, grapes. Can you think of any
all
more?
All the good
turmeric, because curcumin and turmeric. And then extra virgin olive oil. I like that. And dark chocolate and cacao. Tomatoes. A lot of people say that tomatoes are inflammatory, and like I think that that's got to
be
contentious.
It might be a nightshade, so to certain people it might be inflammatory.
Oh, got it. Okay.
This is obviously, there's no one size fits all. So if when you eat it and you feel uncomfortable, then yeah, it's probably not anti-inflammatory to you. But overall, you know, these whole foods have been shown to have anti-inflammatory benefits on a variety of people.
Oh yeah, and cherries as well, because they have anthocyanins and catechins and things like that, which are antioxidants that, you know, fight inflammation, things like that. So those are good things when we talk about incorporating those anti-inflammatory foods. It's not just the fermented foods, you know, because some people have to have an acquired taste to start incorporating fermented foods. My dad is one of them. He doesn't like that sour taste. I mean, it took him a little bit to get into kombucha, but
yeah, now he really likes
but
kombucha.
Now, I mean, I'll ask him, because he'll take a whole week to go through one GT's bottle. I'm like, Pops, what are you doing? Are you just nursing this kombucha? He's like, what, can I have the whole thing in one day? I'm like, yes, drink the whole thing.
Or so, even just half the thing to like save money. But like, yeah, half the thing
is
good.
It's $3.50, you know? It's like maybe $5 back where he lives or whatever, but still. So yeah, that's what we're talking about. It's not just fermented food. You can still eat the stuff that you already are accustomed to eating, maybe just not as much. Just start throwing that stuff into your mix.
Absolutely. You know, make yourself a nice smoothie with a bunch of dark berries, some leafy greens, add some protein powder, and you're good to go.
Yeah.
So we really hope you leave with the tools today to be equipped to start healing your gut and living your best life yet.
Yeah, and we also want to remind you to look out for part two of this podcast. It won't be for another month or so. We're going to bring a specialist on, like I said. So keep an eye out for that. And like always, leave us a review, send us your feedback, check out the show notes, all that good stuff. And we love bringing you this information. So if there's anything you want to know about, give us a shout, send us a message, and maybe we can break it down for you.
Yeah, I mean, I really have to give a shout out to Chris on this episode, because he took a deep dive into all of this research. You know, I put some initial stuff together, but he loves getting into the nitty gritty on this. And, you know, he could have kept going, but I...
Yeah, that's the reason why we had a part two, because I had to cut out like pages and pages.
Yes, so we hope this was enough for you to digest and you left with some action items, and we'll follow up with even more information. We'll catch you on the next one.
All right, have a good one.